Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. I'm Susie Perry.
And I'm Jason Bradbury. And before we get rolling, we've got to say a big thank you to our sponsor, CEX.
Yeah, CEX is the place where your old gadgets don't just gather dust, they get a new life. And it's also where you can find everything from iPhones to classic games, consoles, all without blowing your budget.
Yeah, and the best bit, everything comes with a 5-year warranty, even the retro relics. I thought it said like Susie and I, though. It doesn't say that like Susie and I are into.
That we are the actual retro relic. Exactly. Yeah. So whether you're trading in, upgrading, or on the hunt for some proper retro treasures, head to webuy.com, webuy.com, or one of nearly 400 CEX stores across the UK. Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast, the Inbox Edition, the place where your questions, stories and gadget dilemmas take centre stage.
That's right, we're digging into the weird and wonderful of your gadget lives, from VR headset dilemmas to retro gadgets that make us smile.
Right, first up, Robert Jenkins has got a question. He says, if you could time travel back to the mid-2000s Gadget Show studio, what advice would you give yourself about the future of tech?
Well, I mean, obvious one for me, I had a young lad working for me at the time, and he's become a really good friend of mine, actually. I'll shout him out, Phil Hoy. If you do, I'll never forget the immortal words of this very switched on young guy. He said to me, something really important I need to talk to you about. I think you should invest in something, it's going to be huge. And I said, what? And he went, Bitcoin. And I was like, bit what? Bitcoin. I was like, all right, yeah, sure. And I never did anything about it. And I'd probably be a millionaire if I'd spent, I don't know what the rate of exchange it was then, what it is now. But it was an extraordinary tip at a very early, you know, moment in the sort of this burgeoning cryptocurrency. And I just didn't hear his advice.
With that in mind, like it going back to the mid-2000s, what would you invest? What should we have invested in? Do you reckon?
Nvidia.
I think Nvidia, Apple. I think because that's when it really blew up. Wasn't it? You know, iPhone.
Never yeah, heard. We were part of it. We were part of selling Apple to the world. We loved it, didn't we?
What did we get for it?
Nothing. Nah. What have I ever got for it? What have they ever done for us?
I'd probably tell myself to stop buying DVDs. Just because I didn't realise that streaming was going to change everything so much, you know, the sort of physical actually having, and maybe be a bit kinder to poor old Nokia, because I feel sorry for Nokia, because I used to really love Nokia. I was obsessed with Nokia. I loved it, and then it just got wiped out, didn't it, by touchscreen. They just didn't keep up with the whole touchscreen thing.
That's funny. It's funny. They had that the sort of first generation smartphone thing. They were part of the race, and for some reason they just let it slide. What about BlackBerry as well?
Oh, I know, it's extraordinary, isn't it?
I mean, these aren't things that we would have done. These are things that we would never have expected in that period of time to not be around in 2025. You'd think BlackBerry would now be part of the tech landscape, you know. Extraordinary. I've got another one from Daniel Clark.
Go on.
Daniel said, what's the most underrated bit of retro kit that still makes you smile? Underrated bit of retro kit still makes you smile.
Mini disc comes to mind. The mini disc.
Oh, really?
Not iPlayer. Mini disc player.
And why is that? Why does it make you, why does it make you smile? Apart from the obvious kind of, you know, sort of vintage nature of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know it didn't sort of catch on really, like CDs or MP3 players, did it? But I kind of like the whole ritual of making mixes and clicking those little discs in. It's like a physicality thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Underrated. Maybe the Mega CD, which is the upgrade for the Mega Drive that enables you to play CD games. I don't know that it really caught on. I've had one. I've played with it recently. Played Sewer Shark, and I forget the one with the scantily clad college students that it's like a horror game. I'm not playing it because they're scantily clad. Can I just make that point? But yeah, the FMV video thing, it's just fun. It's really funny, and it's quirky, and waiting for it to load, and I like it. I think it's underrated in that I think it's really playable. Some of the games on it are really playable. I think there's a Star Wars game that I've got as well. Difficult question to answer because I rate RetroKit. I don't underrate it.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple in there. I hope that answers the question.
Good question, Daniel. Thank you.
Another question. Yeah, thank you very much. This one's from Marcus Holloway. He says, what's been the biggest tech wow moment for you personally?
I know what that is. Can I jump in?
Well, yeah. Right. I mean, I think we're both going to say the same thing, but go on.
I don't know if we are, you know.
Maybe not.
I was rehearsing on stage at the NEC for Gadget Show Live, and Ewan, our sort of senior producer at the time, brought a bit of kit that I knew from the script we were going to get to play with on stage, and it was the HTC Vive virtual reality helmet. And I'd had the original Oculus SDK kit, so I wasn't unfamiliar with VR, and he brought this kit, I put it on, and I started to paint using a painting program in midair, and I painted a sculpture, and I was able to, I forget what the program was called on the HTC Vive, but you could create physical three-dimensional paintings in the air, and it, even now, it sends a shiver down my spine. It was incredible. And I was on the Gadget Show stage, and it was one of those ones in the round. It was when we had it in the center of the auditorium. There was no one there. It was just a rehearsal day. And I couldn't believe it. I just saw a new way of creating art that was so intuitive. And so, and for me then, like really visually vivid, very high quality. And the guy or girl from HTC were there, and I knew it was on pre-order, and I'd missed the pre-order. And I think I've said this before on the podcast, but this is in a different context. And I waved my credit card at them, and I said, I have to have one. I have to buy this. And that was really, for me, I think it was the start of my VR journey in a meaningful way. So I would say that's the absolute game-changing moment that for me in terms of seeing something.
I think I've got two in a way. One is quite recent. And I'll say that first because it kind of backs onto what you've just said. So it's when you stuck the Apple Vision Pros on my head.
Oh, and good.
I experienced that for the first time because that was just mind-blowing. They're heavy and they're expensive, but the actual experience, if we're going for wow factor, was completely wow. And my reaction was natural and not hammed up at all. I just couldn't believe what I could see. And subsequent to that, I've, you know, seen other people watch stuff and have the same feeling. So I think that's one of them. And the other one, it sounds a bit boring, but it was when the iPhone came out because it was such a game changer. Yeah, I am, even though I was obsessed with my Nokia N95 at the time. It made everything else feel a bit prehistoric, really, with the physical buttons.
I think everything was instantly prehistoric. I think that's when they were doing what we wish they were doing now, isn't it? Which is that they were innovating magical new things that no one had really seen before. And it was, yeah. I mean, if we're going further back, Marcus, obviously things like my first ever computer, which was the Sinclair ZX80, which was white and had a white clean keyboard. And I had to assemble it myself with my dad out of parts. I mean, that, it doesn't get much better than that, does it? Really. And then recently, I tried something called a lift foil, Suze, which would have been really good on the Gadget Show. But I tried it here in Newquay. And it's a powered surfboard, but it's a foil. So you go up out of the water as you move forward on a wing. Yeah. And it takes... What I liked about it, actually, is it takes ages to get it right. You keep face planting. And when you get it, and you soar about 2 feet, 3 feet above the ocean, and you can go right out, you know, right, literally you can go half a mile out, and you're just riding waves with this controller. That's incredible. So yeah, really great question though. It really makes you think, doesn't it?
We could go on all day because I was just thinking about
when. Yeah, well, ask us again. Yeah, we can.
When we went to with those buggies, and we went kite surfing, me and John Bentley. You can't imagine John Bentley
all right,
doing
yeah.
that now, can you? That was really fun. But then now I'm going down a fun line rather than a wow line. But I was wowed by that because it was more the experience. I'd never done it before, and I loved it. But yeah, thank you for that question. I think it's just your turn for a question. Right, quick half-time pod break to give a shout-out for our sponsor, CEX.
So basically, if you're into your gadgets, and I guess by virtue of being here, you probably are, CEX is a home from home. One minute, you're looking at your favourite films, and the next, you've spotted a retro console you haven't seen since school.
And whatever you pick up, whether it's a tablet, a camera, or even a stack of games, it all comes with a 5-year warranty, so you're covered. With no worries.
And don't forget, you can take your old kit in and trade it for cash. No joke, no word of a lie. That's exactly what I did, Susie, this morning. I'm being absolutely honest. It's exactly what I did. School drop-off, popped into CEX, an old arcade stick into CEX, some money in my bank. Or if you're smart, you can flip it for store credit. Maybe I should have done that. And walk out with something even better.
Yeah, so if you have got tech gathering dust, and we all have got that drawer, haven't we? Or you fancy a browse, check out WeBuy.com or head to one of nearly 400 CEX stores across the UK.
Okay, how about this? Another podcast has asked us a question. What an honour. They are the Howdy Beans podcast.
Oh, God,
so I'll have a listen to them. Yeah, I'm going to have to check them out. Does this mean if there's no Gadget Show on TV, that there's no chance of Gadget Show Live, or you guys... to have a presence at a booth at EGX in Birmingham? That's a very multi-layered question. So there's definitely no Gadget Show TV show, which I think pertains to something we answered the last time we did this. I think you answered that question, Susie. We're not going to go back on the telly because tech happens so quickly now, doesn't it? Innovation happens over a matter of 24 hours. That in order to keep up and on the trends, I think this sort of, what would you call it? Independent journalism, this podcast platform is so much better suited right now. In terms of us having a presence at a show, who knows? You never know. If the podcast goes well, I don't think you never say never, do you, Suze?
No, we never say never. I think sort of genuinely, you know, Gadget Show Live kind of went hand in hand with the TV show. And when it was at its peak, I don't think any of us could actually believe what was happening. We couldn't believe it. It was the closest that you and I had ever come to being Madonna at a rock concert. It was fantastic fun, and just to be immersed and see everybody enjoying themselves, I think it's brilliant. I can't imagine that that's going to happen again, but could there be an element of live and open to this podcast? Yeah, maybe.
I mean, maybe some kind of pop-up.
Yeah, maybe. We could do something live. Couldn't we? You know, other podcasts go and do live shows. We could definitely do something like that in the future if we grew a little bit. Okay, I've got a question from Laura Stevens now. She says she's got kids who are desperate to get into VR, but what's the best entry-level option that won't wreck their eyes or her wallet?
Okay, I'd say it's the MetaQuest 3S for me because it's really, really good value. I think you get change out of 300 quid. And look, the MetaQuest 3 or platform, whichever the S or the standard 3, is so evolved. I mean, it cannot be underestimated that it's something like, you're basically wearing something like a console on your head. So clearly the graphical quality of the games and you've got loads of other applications like movie watching things or, you know, all kinds of social applications, although it depends how young your kids are. I wouldn't encourage them to get into some of the VR social groups. That would not be a thing to encourage. But there's loads of productivity and other bits and pieces and experiences you can have. But it's the games that define the experience. And the games are massive. The library of games is huge. And the experiences are really, really diverse from, you know, art apps where you can, like I was talking about earlier, you can paint objects in space. Or games like Beat Saber are really fun for the kids. There's a game called Population One, which is like a kind of Fortnite where you fly around, but it's in, you know, actually it's in VR, so it's much more immersive. And so many others, too many to mention, really. We should maybe do a roundup of VR games, Suze, on this podcast sometime before Christmas. But that, it's the Quest, the Meta Quest 3S that I would recommend in terms of wallet and just visual quality and catalogue of incredible experiences.
Yeah, and if that's a bit too much, and you might have already tried these, but it's also worth not to overlook the more simple stuff like smartphone-based headsets or even AR apps. They also can be nice, a sort of low-cost way to dip your toe into that world before you splash out on a full headset. And, you know, kids often just get a lot of joy, don't they, from exploring a 360 video of the solar system as they do on big games. It's a gentle introduction, but you maybe you've already tried that, I don't know, but worth thinking about those kinds of things as well.
Okay, our penultimate question comes from someone on X called, I think it's pronounced Ross of the Rovers. Forgive me if I've got that wrong. R-H-O-S of the Rovers. My son wants to get set up in a gym or social space in a room at the end of the garden and boost his Wi-Fi indoors. Would you recommend a mesh system, or would power line adapters be just as good? That's a really good question. First of all, I've got to say that I don't think we know, do we? You have to somehow try it. But I know this much, that something like TP-Link's Deco X50s are quite good. They bounce Wi-Fi between kind of little nodes around your house. I can't profess to knowing whether it would reach to the bottom of the garden. It depends how far it is and what sort of structure you've got, what it's made of. Sometimes, you know, kind of reflective insulation can actually act like a kind of Faraday cage and stop that happening. But it would certainly, you know, you could certainly send internet through the power line, meaning your plug socket, your wiring, your ring main. So as I sit here, Suze, I'm in a structure in my garden. I'm about 20 feet from the house. And what I did was I drilled a hole in the wall. I did a little socket and stuff, but effectively I plugged into my router. And then I got some high quality Ethernet cable built to go outside. And it comes up, and I've then got a little Ethernet socket in the wall. I actually wired it up myself. I did all the cabling. It was quite fun. You have to get a special tool, and there's loads of coloured wires. It was quite a challenge, actually. And I've got, I mean, I might as well be sat next to my router in the front room. It's lightning quick out here. If I was going to do what your son is proposing to do, it depends on the distance. I try and do it hard wire it myself.
So in summary, I think I agree with Jace. If you can use an Ethernet cable to help the mesh along or hardwire it, that would be better. Yeah. Final question from unknown YouTube viewer. That's actually unknown's name, not someone that we didn't know. He says, my favourite episode of The Gadget Show was when you turned Battlefield 3 into a real live simulator. Do you think this could be made now for Battlefield 6?
Yes, please.
Would be used. Oh my God, that was wild, wasn't it? I remember that so much.
Oh my God.
I wasn't even really doing it, it was you, but it was brilliant. That was incredible.
Yeah, but let's be honest, that was so technical. There was a whole team of people that need respect for that, Suze. I'd love to take their compliment, wouldn't you? But it was, well, Robo Challenge involved, probably. But that treadmill was like hundreds of thousands of pounds. And the paintball guns that reacted to the sound cues and the software that was written so that when we heard the enemy shooting, the direction corresponded to the right paintball gun that then shot us and hit you. I mean, it was incredible. What was the question? What do you think? Yes, would it work on Battlefield 6? Of course it would, and I'm loving Battlefield 6. But if so, what would we use? Yeah, I mean,
but you wouldn't have a big giant physical dome now, would you? Probably. You could do it virtually.
Well, there are several treadmills. There's one. So first of all, the Virtuix Omni comes to mind. You can kind of run around on that. So what I'm saying is, how would we create it in here, in my room, for example? Because we couldn't do it large scale, because that sort of budget is TV money, isn't it? I mean, it's literally hundreds of thousands.
It cost so much money, and we had so much help doing it. Because basically, The Gadget Show used to be funded by the infamous competition. But that was
rolling in it! Loads of money! But if you did it now, it'd be something like the Virtuix Omni, all right? So you can Google that and have a look at it. So you could, you know, you could have a relatively good walking, running, crouching experience without even leaving your front room. But then also B-Haptics, that's a great brand. A good friend of mine who's big in the VR scene is always talking about how good B-Haptics is. So I think some form of haptic suit, gloves, that sort of thing would probably give you...
So that would enable you to sort of feel the hit and the sting and everything, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hopefully. He came down to stay and we went to our local... We've got a local VR place here in Newquay, weirdly enough. Although I think it's just closed down, actually, which is sad. But we went there and he put the B-Haptic suit on me and it made me jump. I couldn't believe how physical it can be. So, yeah, that would be my suggestion. So I guess if you're doing that, then you need to be doing it in VR as well. So you'd need, you know, a really good VR helmet. And you can take your pick. There are so many. I mean, I'm a big fan of the old... Look down there. Where is it? Around is somewhere. My Quest 3. I think my Quest 3 is more than adequate to give an immersive Battlefield 6 experience. But you can get much higher visuals from much more expensive headsets. So I don't think that, you know, some form of omnidirectional, you know, treadmill, yeah, miniature thing is going to work. But the visuals would be more than catered for by a Meta Quest 3, I think. Or maybe the... What's that one? It's... I never know how to pronounce it. Is it Varjo, the XR4, I think, which is... It's insane. It's got, like... I think it's got four screens. So it's got two screens for peripherals, for peripheral vision, and then... Two for focused, you know, much more focused stuff like the kind of aimer on your gun, you know, the iron sight and stuff. Anyway,
and then if you took it a bit further, so you could play Elder Scrolls, so and you could have AI that were coming up with much better quests for you. Not really rubbish scripted rubbish. Yeah, and it would just be. Yeah. Unexpected, and you wouldn't know, and it just goes on to a whole new level, doesn't it, with AI?
Well, it does. I think this sort of procedurally generated AI thing, which we keep being told is coming, is actually almost more important than my, you know, omnidirectional treadmill and paintball guns, because actually that would be really immersive, wouldn't it? But the combination of all of those things, and it's like Ready Player One, isn't it? At the end of the garden, just in your shed. Amazing.
Mind-blowing. When we did that, Battlefield 3 would never have considered that you could make it on a small basis like that. But it's a conversation.
Yeah, that's the takeaway, isn't it?
If you start covering all different games and how you could play them.
Okay, it's time for another Fact Off. This is where Susie and I go head-to-head with little nuggets of useless but interesting tech trivia that we found out.
Okay, I'll start the proceedings this week then, shall I, with some phone facts. Did you know that the iPhone 6 was the most popular iPhone? It sold over 222 million worldwide, whereas the original iPhone only sold 6 million. And the more recent 16 sold about 84 million. Total sales across all three models is 3 billion since 2007. However, Apple isn't the most popular smartphone brand. That honour goes to Samsung, with 258 million phones sold in 2022 alone to Apple's 225 million.
Well, if we're talking tech sales figures, then did you know the best-selling video game has sold over 500 million copies? Can you guess what it is?
Okay. Mario?
No.
GTA?
No.
Pokemon?
No. Believe it or not, it's Tetris. Tetris.
Is it?
520 million copies sold across all platforms. And its closest rival is Minecraft, which is less surprising, which itself has sold a cool 300 million copies. I actually would have thought Minecraft would have sold more than that. That's really interesting. But the highest grossing game ever will surprise a lot of people. It isn't Fortnite. It's not GTA Suze or indeed Minecraft. It's actually Dungeon Fighter Online. This side-scrolling beat-em-up, hugely popular in Asia, has earned an estimated, wait for this, $22 billion globally, with more than 850 million players worldwide. Wow. And in second place, a mobile juggernaut, Honor of Kings. This game has pulled in over $18 billion in lifetime revenue, making it the most successful mobile title ever. Honor of Kings is a multiplayer online battle arena. Hugely popular, and I'm guessing some people listening or watching this podcast may never have even heard of it.
Right, can you guess what the best-selling single device ever is?
So a gadget just in and of itself. So not a kind of lineup of different versions of one thing. iPod?
It's not Apple. It's actually the Nokia 1100. Yep. The little brick phone from 2003. It sold, ready, 250 million units worldwide. It even outsold iPhone 6, 222 million. And it's still the single best-selling mobile phone in history. So while Apple and Samsung fight it out today, the humble 20 quid Nokia quietly holds the crown. I love that.
That's absolutely astonishing.
Okay, that's a wrap on this week's Inbox Edition. Thank you for your brilliant questions and your stories.
Yeah, don't hold back. The stranger, the better. Get in touch via any of our socials, or you can email us via contact@northone.tv.
Yep, and a big shout out to CEX for backing the podcast. Thank you so much. Whether you're hunting for the latest tech or a retro treasure, or you fancy trading in your old kit for cash or credit, CEX will have you covered. Plus, you get a 5-year warranty, and you can find them at webuy.com or in one of nearly 400 stores across the UK.
Yeah, and don't forget, the Main Gadget Show podcast drops every week too. So hit subscribe and we'll catch you next time. Until then, keep your gadgets juiced and your inbox untidy.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.